Welcome to the Drive Phase Podcast, the best podcast for information on issues surrounding sports business in the Caribbean. On the Drive Phase, we have discussions with sport administrators, coaches, athletes, and various stakeholders in the sporting industry and examine their contribution to sports and entrepreneurship. Here's your host, Dalton Myers.
Thanks for that introduction, Colleen, and greetings to everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of the Drive Phase Podcast. We have a very exciting package for you today, which I am sure you will enjoy. Let me just use this opportunity, though, to wish you and your family season's greetings from all of us here at the Drive Phase Podcast family. So, today we will have a great lineup for you as usual. We have our feature on the sideline where I will take on a topical issue of the day. Certainly then we'll have our main segment, the play of the day. Then we close out with the podcast pick. So you do stay with us until the end because we have a great lineup for you. So on the sideline today, we talk World Anti-Doping Agency versus Russia. So depending on who you talk to, the decision by the Court of Arbitration for Sport, decision to reduce the ban on the use of Russia's name and flag at the Olympics, Paralympic Games and major sporting events from 4 years to 2 years is good or bad news for athletes and the fight against doping in sports. So it really depends on who you talk to. So CAS handed down a ruling on the arbitration between WADA and Russia, arising from the decision in December 2019 by WADA to ban Russia for a period of 4 years. Now, this ban had included use of name, the Russian name, Russian flag, ability to bid for major games, as well as just having members of Russia government and sporting federation from sitting on boards of International Olympic Committee, etc. This also stemmed from years of investigation, reports, etc., which I will go into later. So for now, what did CAS say is the big question. Now, before I summarize the ruling, I wanted to note that CAS had quite a lot to say about this ongoing saga. And they indicated in the decision that the final decision itself, quote, should not be read as a validation of the conduct of RUSADA, which is the Russian Anti-Doping Agency, or the Russian authorities, end of quote. It further concluded that, and I quote, in making its orders, the panel is limited by the powers granted under the applicable law, in particular the WADA Anti-Doping Code and the ISCCS. And finally, that the Russian Anti-Doping Agency, RUSADA, is found to be non-compliant with the World Anti-Doping Code in connection with its failure to procure the authentic LIMS data and underlying analytical data for former Moscow laboratory that was received by WADA, which simply means that the CAS body found that the Russian Anti-Doping Association was non-compliant in many different areas. So with that out of the way, the ruling is that for a period of now of 2 years instead of four, the government officials and federation representatives are not allowed to be appointed to or sit on any board or committee of signatory body to the WADA code. Now, this includes, amongst others, World Athletics, FIFA, etc. The other thing is that they may not be accredited to or participate in any or attend any event, major events such as the Olympic, Paralympic Games, etc. Thirdly, the Russia Federation or any Russia signatory body national federation may not host or bid for or be granted the right to host any major games. And that subject to everything set out, the flag of the Russia Federation, current or historical, may not be flown or displayed in any official venue or area controlled by a signatory body, which includes the FIFA, etc., or event organizers appointed by the signatory body. And what that simply means is that at no point any Russian flag must be flown at any major events or events being hosted by World Athletics body, you know, like Diamond Leagues, etc. Importantly, as it relates to the athletes now, athletes may be able to compete, that's Russian athlete, but any athlete from Russia and their athlete support personnel may only participate in or attend any of the following events during the two-year period on the condition that the athlete or the support personnel has not been subjected to any suspension or restrictions or conditions or exclusions imposed by a competent authority in any past or future proceedings which remain in force at the time of that specific event, right? So if they're on any anti-doping violation, then they can't compete. Russian athletes, support personnel, shall participate in a neutral uniform which shall not contain the flag of the Russian Federation or any national emblem or other national symbols of the Russian Federation. And also, the Russian athletes or support personnel shall not display publicly the flag of the Russian Federation or the name Russia. And then, that the Russian national anthem or any anthem linked to the Russia shall not be officially played or sung at any official event, venue, or other area controlled by the signatory or its appointed event organizers. Now, that is very important. Also, RUSADA is required to make some adjustments to be reinstated, which includes paying financial fines to WADA as well as comply with WADA's investigative branch. Now, should we be happy with this? I'm not totally sure. This probably is an early Christmas gift for RUSADA. Certainly, USADA has come out swinging in the statement. That's the United States of America Anti-Doping Agency. They have said that while the first instinct is to express obvious shock, the fact is we should have all seen this coming. WADA and the IOC have manipulated and mishandled this sordid Russia state doping affair from day one and have put politics over principle once again. In addition, it continues, in addition to many other loopholes, this decision expressly gives IOC members from Russia special treatment and exempts them from any consequences for their bad acts that rob sports and clean athletes. End of quote. That statement by USADA coming out immediately after CAS made this decision. Now, remember that this has been long going, ongoing saga. In fact, there has been suspicions about extent of state-sponsored doping for decades now, with many reports happening. So let me just say, how did we get to this point? And let me just step back a bit. So in 2014, a German broadcaster, ARD, alleged that systematic doping in Russia athletics, that there's systematic doping, which was met with criticism from Russia's sport body, but some resignation followed. IAAF was also implicated, IAAF now World Athletics. Then in 2015, WADA called for Russia's track and field team to be banned from international competition, including from the 2017, what was coming up to be the 2016, Rio Olympics. The IAAF suspends Russia athletics team, and WADA also suspends Russia national anti-doping body, RUSADA, over non-compliance. Now, all of that happened in 2015. In 2016, though, we had what was called the McLaren Report, and the former head of Moscow Anti-Doping Laboratory, Grigory Rodchenkov, went public alleging that a highly organized doping campaign happened at the 2014 Sochi Olympics. Now, remember, 2016 was an Olympic year. The International Olympic Committee at the time, IOC, did not give an outright ban, but said individual federations would have to decide whether to allow Russian athletes to compete. And many persons wanted the IOC to go much further. Now, fast forward to 2017, the IOC then bans Russia Olympic Committee from the Pyeongchang Winter Games, but allows clean athletes to take part as neutral competitors. And so things started to unfold. But in 2018, WADA surprisingly lifts its three-month ban on RUSADA, even though it did not get access to its doping-tainted Moscow laboratory information. But IWF extends its ban on Russian Athletes Federation. IWF was consistent with that. 2019, IWF then continued with its ban on Russian athletes, even while changing its name to World Athletics. And WADA then bans Russia for 4 years over the manipulation of data, excluding the country, and then excluding the country's athletes from what was coming up as the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. And also banned them from the 2022 Winter Games, which is the Beijing Winter Olympics, the 2024 Paris Games, and the 2022 World Cup. Now, here we are in 2020, where it was appealed to CAS. CAS heard the appeal and made the decision to reduce most of those to 2 years. I think the decision by WADA is going to be seen by some as not going far enough to tackle Russia doping scandal and just the anti-doping fight and protecting clean sport. Even with 2 year ban, there are several previsos that provisions that created loopholes for athletes and officials to take advantage of. Now, I won't get into all of those, but there are so many loopholes. The McLaren report, by the way, if you remember, was very explosive and gave an impression of deliberate attempts to cheat by both officials and athletes, as well as support personnel. Today, there are still questions surrounding the efforts of RUSADA in tackling doping, as well as just correcting some of those deficiencies in the system. You can guarantee that 2020 will be another continuation of this saga, as we're nowhere close to the end. In this round, Russia may have won, but more is yet to come in this saga with World Anti-Doping Agency. All right, so tell me what you think. Feel free to send me feedback on Twitter. I'm at Dalton S. Myers, or you can just use the Jive Phase GA. That's on the sidelines. All right, guys, remember to hop over to our YouTube channel and subscribe. It's the Jive Phase Media. And of course, like and follow us on all of our social media platforms. So, as usual, we have the play of the day. And today, it's more like the swim of the day, as I have with me four-time Olympian and Commonwealth Games medalist, world record holder, and Jamaica Sportswoman of the Year, and many other accolades that we'll be discussing, including being the first Black woman to win a medal at a major swim competition. Sport journalist and awesome storyteller Donald Oliver describes her as the darling of the pool in the documentary with the same name. Today I have with me none other than Jamaica's Alia Atkinson. Alia, welcome to the Jive Phase podcast.
Thank you very much. This is fun.
Yes, it is. So tell me, honest labor bears a lovely face. What does that mean for you?
It means dedication and staying true to who you are. You can always come out successful, even if the circumstances aren't favorable for you.
Yeah. And you have gone through a lot. People see you and you've been breaking records, etc. But there have been some down times for you. And I suspect mottos like these are what have kind of just brought you through.
Yeah, I think especially learning it at a young age, coming from Vaz, it implements that certain standard into your growth. And my entire family went to Vaz, so it's generational. So we've always pushed and had hard work, been true to ourselves and just dedicated what we can to the best of our ability.
Go ahead.
No, continue.
I actually wanted you to talk, but talking about Vaz prep, that's where a lot of this started. Coach Matthew Campbell, I think it is, that you started with or who helped to push you. Give us that history and how you started to just get involved with swimming.
Yeah, so Coach Matthew was our Learn to Swim coach. He was a part of Speedos, and we learned up at Queens. It was just a normal Learn to Swim, making sure that we knew how to swim, because it's not just a sport. It's a necessity. It's something everyone should have as a life skill. So for us, we just did that. And my father is big into track and field and went to all of his records and stuff like that. And my uncle as well. So we're a track and field family. So we went that route first, but it didn't really work out. So swimming was always there. We always kept up with the swimming, and we just decided to stick to the swimming.
If you did track and field, which event do you think you would have done? Which one do you like? I mean, you're not a runner, right? But which event are you?
I think I would triple jump or long jump. I really don't want to run 100 or more than that.
Nothing over 100. All right, let's fast forward a bit to 2020. How has that been going for you? There have been less events compared to years before, but you have been competing. Talk to me first about how you have managed the lockdown and how you've managed to just keep fit.
Well, 2020 has been definitely something to change your personality and really test your character. I think as we move on and 2020 came about, we had expectations of what this year was supposed to be, especially with Olympics. And we had goals that were planned to do. And little by little, when the goals were not met, you just kind of have to sit back and reevaluate. But when the lockdown happened and swimming Olympics got canceled and it looked like there was nothing on the horizon coming up, the athletic mentality really went into that slump of what am I doing? Why am I still doing this? And just who you are outside of the sport. Like what type of person are you outside of your sport? And I think that's when you really have, when I did anyway, when I really had to just redefine who I was and what I want to do in this world and just the things that I want to do. And I think that's what 2020 did for me, just reevaluate why am I in the sport, what I still have to left to do, and what I want to do in the future.
We know a lot of what you have been doing in the pool, and I want to get out of the pool just a bit. You've done a lot of outreach project off air. We're talking about the fact that this year you haven't been able to do some of those face-to-face outreach that, you know, you have been doing all charity work over the years. Talk to us about some of those that you have done over the years and how do you want to expand that part of Ali Atkinson Brand?
Well, the stuff that I've been doing, it's always been through swimming. It just kind of rolled into it. So I think Sagicor Run, I got introduced to Jamaica Kidney Kings Foundation. And through that, I started just becoming a part of them life and what them have to go through. Mm-hmm. So the Jamaica Kidney Kids Foundation helps with treatment of dialysis and kidney diseases and different functions throughout Jamaica. So they all go to Kingston and get treatment. And through that, I've just been helping them each and every year, whatever I can, if it's just promoting or marketing or whatever it is. But I think with swimming, it has opened up to so many doors for me. I think I had the ability to do swim clinics, but also to work with different charities in and outside of Jamaica, worldwide. Different experiences that I don't think I would have gotten if it wasn't for swimming. I don't know if I answered your question. I'm so sorry.
No. So let me just ask you though, Alia, in a country where track and field is huge and where, you know, football is a big thing, netball, etc. Obviously, you were involved in sport, but in swimming, but at what point did you decide, you know what, I can make it as a professional in this event? Because there weren't Jamaicans competing professionally, trying to earn from the sport.
To be honest, I don't think swimming had that advantage back in the 90s and early 2000s. I think just recently you're able to have some sort of financial gain with swimming. Mm-hmm. And before that, you have to go to like a world championships.
And that's probably the only big meet you'll be able to get some sort of financial gain. So a part of it, I think it was after 2012 Olympics when I graduated. Mm. And I really decided what I want to do in the sport, if I want to continue or not. But continuing didn't mean I was going to get financial help or anything like that. So I just continued to see what I could do in the sport. And after that, I think 2013 and onwards, I started to accumulate some more funds to be able to go internationally. And then internationally, more meets started to come up that had prize money. Mm-hmm. And eventually it just got bigger and bigger. So it's a little bit of good timing where I am in the sport that them started to give some sort of money. And as well as I just wanted to see what I wanted to do in the sport, regardless of if there was money involved or not.
And when you went to your first Olympic in 2004, Athens, and now we're in 2020 going to 2021. So this will be your fifth Olympics that you have, well, the fifth one you have qualified for. Mm-hmm. What keep you going? There are not many swimmers who will continue after, you know, two, three, four because they are told that swimming takes on the body. How do you keep healthy and what keeps you going?
I think I had underestimated myself when I was younger. I just thought anybody can do this. It's fine. and I had that mentality for a long time until about when I was about 27, 28, when I really started to feel the physical pressures as well as the mental fatigue. Yeah. And what I realized is as long as the mind is ready and willing, the body will follow suit. Yes, you have aches and pains. Yes, there's rehab stuff and you have to take a little bit more rest and more rehab and more gently with yourself. But I think the mind goes first. The mind doesn't want to get up anymore. The mind doesn't want to be as passionate or give as much energy. And I think that's where a lot of the athletes falter. So for me, it's mentally staying fun. I may not have that same aggression and that same fight in me as I did when I was younger. But now it's just having fun and seeing what I can do in the sport, seeing if I can take down any young studs.
Life is funny because you were the youngster a few years ago trying to take down some of the more senior pros, whether in college or professionally. And now you're trying to take down some of the youngsters who are trying to take you down.
I mean, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed saying, oh, that girl is like 28. I'm going to take her down. And I see now, I see the young ones looking at me and be like, no, I know what you're thinking. Like, not sick. It doesn't always work in my favor, though. But okay.
And you still have that drive, you know, with Tokyo 2021. Well, 2020 in 21. How is the plans coming on for that? And then I'll ask you the second part of the question. But let me just ask you that first. How's that coming along?
I think the ISL, which is the first pro competition, making swimming not in an amateur sport, but a professional sport. This is their second season doing it. I think that really put everything into perspective because without that, there was no meets. Countries were afraid because of the COVID pandemic to do meets. So that really broke it out for the swimming world. Having people from all over the world come together in one space for 6 weeks and creating a bubble for them. That really helped the swimmers to, one, see where they are in the sport, see where they are in their training. Two, revitalize them and give them the energy to push again for Olympics next year. And three, help other countries realize that it's something we need to start living with. Mm-hmm. And just taking the precautions. So I think ISL did a really great thing in taking that huge step. Because for me, it helped put things back into perspective. Mm-hmm. Without a meet this year, it would have been really hard to stay in shape and just to stay in shape mentally and physically. So that really broke it down for us to get back in shape for 2021.
Most persons know you as one of the bubbly personalities, and you've been going through all these years of competition with a great amount of success, I may add. But during that time, you'd have had some disappointments. Looking back, which event would you say is your biggest disappointment, or which event would you say, oh man, looking back at that, that one sucks?
It's like, at this point in my career, you really have to like, all right, in your early 20s, what was your disappointment? In your late 20s, what was your disappointment? There are so many. And I don't know if it's because I'm older now or just the experience I've gotten from it. The scars left behind aren't so deep anymore.
Right.
So I look at it and what would have hurt me, like, I would have said, no, this meet was it. It happened. So it's really hard to say no. But I guess it's always the last one. It's always that last event will always hurt a little bit more. Whether it was more detrimental to my whole psyche than previous ones, I'm not sure. Right. But which one would that be? I'm not sure. I've been having a rough time lately.
Well, she says that with a big smile, people. She says I've been having a rough time lately, and a huge smile and a laugh.
Oh, you have to laugh at yourself.
I agree. And isn't that what kind of keeps you through? Because if I might add, I was at Commonwealth Games with you, and I saw 2018 in Gold Coast. And I suspect you believe truly in yourself that you would have won a gold medal. And I could see some level of disappointment there, but then you have managed to pick up yourself even after that to go to CSE Games, to go to other major events and do well. So you have been able to pick up yourself each time you consider these things disappointments and really do well, don't it?
Yes. As I get older, and I talk to a lot of other athletes, and ISL was a good thing because you had so many different top athletes in one area. It was easy just to get a piece of their psyche. You realize there are so many different ways to succeed and different types of athletes. And from the most part, a lot of it has to do with narcissism. Like, you have to have that little bit of ego on you. Some people have an outward narcissistic approach and some people have an inward. But besides that, and having that confidence to know that you can do it before you even swim or compete, you have to be able to have that mentality to pick yourself up when the ego falls. Yeah. When you don't do what you expected or what you hoped, you have to have that bounce back to be like, all right, here we go again. And I think that's what creates perseverance in a sport, and that's what gives athletes, especially at a young age, that ability to fight back when life hits. And yeah, it's something that you learn and you have to go with and roll with the punches. But just looking back on my entire career and everybody who I've spoken to, you have to have a little bit of that confidence, the humility to understand like it's not going to happen every single time, and the fight, not to fight against yourself, but to fight against that mentality to give up or to believe that that last race defined everything that you are when it's not.
In Donald Oliver's documentary, Darling of the Pool, you've mentioned your family and the support system around you. Give us a little bit more on that. What is that support system like? Who are the people who keep Alia going, even when she's, you know, consider retiring?
I'm going to give you like a story. So, I'm sorry to go back to the ISL because it's the only thing that happened this year.
No, man, it's completely fine.
Okay, good. So I was part of London Roar, which is in the ISL, mm-hmm. which is part of UK-based. So I was with a lot of British swimmers or UK swimmers as well, some Scots and Irishmen as well. So on semifinals, they asked them entire families to do videos and to send a team. And so the day before semifinals, we all watched the videos of everybody's family. It was like almost 2 hours. When I tell you that at least 30 minutes of the hour and a half on a 30 member team was my family, it went from like embarrassment to just acceptance to just laughing at myself. But I'm the only black person. So every black person that came up on the screen, they're like, Ali again. I was like, I asked my mother, I was like, why do you bring so much pizza? First of all, I thought they were going to give it to everybody individually. I didn't know everybody was going to watch it together. I'm like, that's a fair point. Secondly, them gave them like a week time frame. So mommy just sent it out to everybody, thinking that maybe a few people will respond. Everybody responded within 24 hours.
Wow.
30 minutes. And Coach Matthew was there. Coach Matthew was a part of it. Him sent a little thing. Coach Julian from Vidas. Some friends I've had from like UK and from Sumin.
Right.
My family in Jamaica, my family in the US, like everyone. And so of course, the people who were making fun of me were the people who got like one or two. And right. The family just said, swim good. My family had, them had a beat, them had a dance. One person make up a song that became the official motto of the London Roar. And it shows the Jamaican spirit, which is great.
Right.
Just to have that passion and fun and the beat and the rhythm, but also the love and support of the family. Like, them came out fully dressed, fully choreographed. Just to support me from miles away. So I think that gives a little bit of the family support. Because it doesn't matter who it is, whether it's the smallest of the cousins or the eldest of the aunts or uncles. They're there when you ask or when you need them, or even when you don't, they're right there as well. So I think that really has helped me in the sports to know I'm not alone no matter where I am. And just to have fun with it no matter what, because they're laughing somewhere. No matter what.
And they each try to play, I guess, a different role wherever possible and pick up a different point. I know your aunt and your mom, at some point I would have interacted with them even before talking with you in different capacities. Either they're cussing me about something or you know, highly recommending something, but they're in the inbox somewhere.
Them don't play, man. Them don't play.
Let me just say, for the people who have never met them, and I've been fortunate to meet your mother in Gold Coast, but met her via email and aunt via phone call. They don't play.
Them don't play.
They're not joking around.
Because they're my managers too. So when I started going all of this, I went to a few places, but nobody really heard of me or wanted to manage me or even thought to me was anything. So I said, you know what? Just keep it within the family. Nobody with all of them. And what I got was people who were sincere and just really, they reached the part of Jamaica that really wanted to help. So Grace Kennedy Money Services has been my sponsor for a long, long, long time. And I don't think I would have gotten that partnership if it wasn't for my aunt going to different places and saying, hey, I know you don't know Alia. I know she's still low on the thing, but I know her personality. I know what dedication she has. I know what fight. And Grace Kennedy maybe not knowing as much as they know now about me, but they believed what she knew about me. And I don't think I would have gotten that from anybody else.
Big up, Grace.
Yeah, big up, Grace. Grace Kennedy Money Services. So, I mean, when you say you're going to send a flight itinerary come Wednesday, and Wednesday come and the flight itinerary not there, you're going to get a couple calls.
Yeah, no, they're going to call. Listen, if it's donating, they're donating something and you made a mistake with it, or if Alia is supposed to get an itinerary and it doesn't reach when it's supposed to, or a favorable itinerary, you're getting a call. You're getting a call, you're getting a text, you're getting a something from them, and they're not going to be pleased.
No, they'll do it with a smile.
And no, well, that's true. Let me just say that they're awesome. They're really awesome, and I love the way they operate, because they try to ensure that, you know, everything is taken care of for you, etc. So no, I big them up for that. Talking about the future and some of the athletes coming around, who are some of the young Alia, whether male or female, that you see, you expect to take over? And let me just make a preamble by saying that I know even for Com Games and a few others, You have been really mad at many of us because you think Jamaica needs to send more and invest in more young swimmers. You and I had this discussion a lot in Gold Coast, which is fine.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, good. Got 2 years to cool down from that. No, I don't want to name names because I know I'm going to forget somebody and that's going to be devastating. But there are a lot of swimmers coming up within the CARIFTA and the CISCs and the CC CANs that are doing fantastic. Mentally, I think they're really staying in gear. They're holding on to their goals. Physically, they're starting to grow and mature in the sport and develop the areas where you need to develop as a swimmer and as an athlete. Mm-hmm. And I think where we used to have a drop off around 18, 20, I think there are more that are being sustained, whether it's in Jamaica, whether it's in colleges abroad, wherever they are. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see a bigger increase of athletes progress past that age 20, where we can see them really starting to learn about the sport and really develop where they need to. And maybe we can have one go to multiple Olympics. Because with swimming, usually there are some outliers, but usually around 21, 25, you really start to see that peak. Nice. But the problem is we didn't have that many swimmers reaching that point to see the peak. They were even given up due to unforeseen circumstances or financial circumstances, and they couldn't make it. So they gave up before that happened. And that's terrible to be in the sport for so long and to not feel accomplished or content with their performances. So one reason to stay in the sport for as long as I have is to, one, see the potential of what swimming can do if you stay in the sport long enough, to give them hope to keep on driving, even though it seems a bit dim right now. But also to be excited, to want to go internationally to swim, to want to go to colleges and have that fun and learn from different coaches that have coached Olympic athletes all over the world. But yeah, there are a bunch of swimmers, female and male, that are really coming up in Jamaica. And if we nurture them and develop them properly, we can see a huge push for 2024 and hopefully onwards.
Yeah, you usually don't go over in terms of controversy or criticism, but are you disappointed that we haven't developed more or invested in more talent? So the gap between Alia and the next star coming out of Jamaica seem to be widening. Are you disappointed or you're confident that at some point we're going to be getting it?
I mean, I try to do the silver lining. So when I look back at Olympics, luckily we had somebody represent Jamaica at every Olympics. Mm-hmm. However, for somebody to final at Olympics, it was every 12 years. So that was the big increase. Like, why we can't have them there, but are they there just for show or do you want them to produce?
Right.
So every 12 years was a bit too much. So right now, I had 2012, 2016, and hopefully 2020. But what we're seeing now is that it's not just one individual that's progressing in Jamaica. They're all about the same age. Mm-hmm. So if we can have multiple girls pushing together for a relay or pushing together as a team to have multiple people reaching to get that, just to make it, to get into semifinals, to get into finals and be excited for another 4 years.
Right.
Then we can see that breakdown. And to say that's a disappointment, I can't, because it's definitely it's more than I've seen in the past. And it definitely looks that Jamaica is trying to progress and reach to a point where we can have multiple swimmers make it into final one Olympics. But at the same time, swimming in itself is developing, not just in Jamaica, but in the Caribbean and as an entity by itself. Having more financial opportunities, having more age group championships, not just CARIFTA, not just regionally, but hemisphere-wise as well, giving everybody that experience and the excitement to keep on going. I think our greatest setback is not reaching out for those things that are being handed out by FINA and all those swimming bodies. not trying to be as accessible as the other Caribbean islands, to really grab it and throw our athletes to different meets, get them the exposure. Don't be afraid to just, we're going to this meet, we're going to this meet, we're going to this meet. I think that's our biggest setback. But as we are now, we are definitely better than we were in the past. Mm. And to overlook that would be detrimental to the young ones coming up.
Yeah, and we usually do very well at Carifta. We suspect after Carifta, though, we find persons from the other Caribbean islands where we're going to more meets. I mean, certainly we have the Trinis, the Bajans, Bermudans, who are just everywhere compared to our athletes. Not that we're not going places, but you get the impression that through whatever means, I mean, I don't know how they do it, but they seem to be getting their people out there. And I suspect we need to do more of that, Alia.
Yeah, as I travel to the different, because I'm a athlete member of the UANA, and UANA is a new program that they developed within the Pan American areas. And just looking at the other countries, I think we brought 6 people. No boys, it was all girls. And so what I'm seeing is that a lot of the countries, they are bringing not just their top people, but the younger ones to fill that place. So there's always a cycle. There's never a drop off in their age group programs. So even if that person never comes to get a medal, they're bringing them, and they're finding the resources, they're finding the sponsorship, they're doing all the things to help them get there as well. I know there's a lot of scholarship opportunities with FINA for developmental programs that we could be using, but that's on a completely different technical side that I'm not aware of. But yeah, I've seen the Bajans, I've seen Bermuda and Trinidad as well really develop an athlete, and you can see it with Dylan Carter and the other brothers that are coming up in the sport, and they're doing fantastic.
Yes.
Not that it's not a Trinidad thing. It's not just he's Dylan Carter. They have developed him at a young age, and they're seeing the fruit of all their hard labor. So I think that is the way we need to go. How we're going to get there, it takes a huge conversation with a lot of more people in official lane and parents and coaches and staff. But it can be done. It can be done.
I was going to say something, but I know I won't get it out to you because you don't get involved in the politics, no matter how I try to drag it out of you, Alia. So where I'll go with this is to ask you about how do you feel being that person, not just the black person, but certainly the person out of the Caribbean who is the absolute star everyone look up to. How do you manage that in terms of the fame by giving much to people, but still managing to get your rest, get your what your body needs, etc.? How do you manage to do that in terms of building the Alia Atkinson brand?
I think it goes back to Vaz. It goes back to the motto. Honest labor is not just the labor that you put into the sport. It's giving back all the expertise that I've gained out of the years. Being accessible and agreeable to the other athletes when they ask questions. And going out there and being able for them to see me. It's not just like a face that them see on the ISL or Olympics and say, oh, wow, yeah, you know, she's... No. It's like, oh, yeah, I met her at Crypto. Oh, yeah, I saw her at UANA. You know, me and she had a joke. It's being able to be comfortable, seeing the next generation and having, if they have any issues, to be able to talk to me, to be able to ask those questions.
Let me ask a follow-up one to that. For the youngsters, what advice do you give them? What are some of the things that you tell them about the sport, just about life and how to stay positive, etc.? So what, and for persons who are listening, what advice would you give to young swimmers?
The advice I would give to the young swimmers is the advice I had. Have small goals. And I'm not saying not to dream big. If dream as big as you can. But in order for you to get from one meet to another, to one quarter to another, to 1 year to another, you have to have those small goals. And those are the small goals that you remember each and every day when you're in practice. is what gets you up in the morning. Like, there's no way you're going to say, all right, I want to go to the Olympics 4 years from now, and that going to help you get out of the bed at 5 a.m. in the morning. So having those small goals, keeping something tangible in your head is important for that mentality. Also having fun. A lot of swimmers I've heard around 16, 17 have that plateau where it's just not getting any better no matter what I do. And really, physically, you're fine, but mentally, you're so discouraged. And that's when it goes back to those small goals, switching it up, changing your workout, changing the dynamic, being creative and having fun. I think that's the best thing. If you have fun in the sport, you'll stay in it longer. You won't have so many expectations about what you're going to do. You won't be as stressed on yourself because you're there to have fun. And what I realize is when you have fun, you swim fast. So that's my advice. I know it's a lot. I know you have expectations and you want it to happen now. But if you have fun in the sport, you'll be in it longer. If you're in it longer, you're allowing yourself a greater percentage to succeed, a greater probability of you succeeding. So have fun, guys. Life is short. Have fun.
And how do they how should they manage disappointments and criticism? Because one of the things that I'm sure you would have faced is, you know, can she make it? Is she the real deal? Can she duplicate this? Can she make it to the finals? Okay, she's in the finals. Can she come in the top five? Can she come in top four? Can she win a major event? And you're doing all of that. So how should these youngsters manage some of those criticism in the sport and just in general?
It takes a bit of maturity. And if they can learn it at a young age, that would be great. But for any athlete, you have to learn your pros and the cons, what works for you and what does not. For me, it came a little bit later because, yes, I am aging myself. Phones weren't out yet when I was a teenager. We didn't have an iPhone or Android or whatever. So it was a lot easier not to see the social media stuff, not to hear what people were saying. No, I'm very sorry, but you hear it everywhere you go.
Right.
So you really need to know what type of athlete you are. If you're fueled from people saying you can't do it, if that gives you that energy, then great. Search social media. Find it all out. But if you're one of those athletes that when you see that, you start to believe it and your confidence starts to diminish and you're in your head too much, stay away from social media. Going up to a competition, I stay away from social media 2 weeks to a week before a competition because I don't need to hear it. It's people talking to talk. It has nothing to do with who I am, what I'm going to do in the sport. If you want me to win a medal, great, thank you. But that's not going to help me. So you need to know what works for you. And when you find that, stick to it. But it takes you realizing it. What works for somebody may not work for you. And realizing if what somebody is doing is upsetting you or not making you swim the best you can or compete the best you can, tell them and change it up. It definitely does take maturity and more experience in the sport. And that's probably where the narcissism comes in, to be like, that doesn't work for me. You need to change it. But you need to have that humility to understand what you're doing and saying it doesn't work. And to not think like it's everybody else. You have to know that it's you as well. It's playing a part on what you're doing.
Is there an event looking back leading up to now or a medal that you would say there are so many highlights, but that is the one that is like my number one, or each time I'm feeling down, that's the one I try to remember.
Once again, man. Yeah. Early 20s, late 20s, early 30s.
All right. So let's go there then. So let's say the 20s. So for each of those decades, which one, the early 20s, late 20s, which one is your favorite early 20s, late 20s, and stuff like those? So since we're in early 30s.
early 20s have to be 2012 Olympics.
Awesome.
Because it was just bittersweet, man. Like, I never expected to get fourth. I never expected to go that fast. Like, the whole thing was just a dream. Like, I was like, okay, time to wake up. I was like, oh, this, okay, this is great. So yeah, so early 20s was definitely the finals or semifinals, or not semi, swim off for Olympics. Late 20s, I would have to say one of the world records. I would say the first one because it was just completely flabbergasted, like completely don't know what's going on. But each one of them was something different because each one of them, I went into it not thinking that the outcome would have been a world record. Yeah. It wasn't like, okay, I'm feeling good. Today's the day. Each time I felt like that, I was way off. But it was those days where, as I said before, physically you are fine. It's the mental aspect. So it was all four of those world records, two of them repeated again. Mm. Those were feeling fatigued. Mentally, I was just somewhere else. And I really had to refocus and said, look, I am here. This is what I'm doing. Who cares about what the outcome is? I'm going to give it my best. And whatever happens, I will smile at the end. And those were the best ones. And those all happened in my late 20s. So success can happen after a quarter century. Yeah. But yeah. And for my 30s, ooh. I think for my 30s, it would have to be my last race in ISL because I was 0.3 off the world record. And once again, those races, I was feeling very bad. Physically, I was just felt very slow and heavy. And it was one of those races where I'm like, all right, I don't know what's going to happen, but I will put up a fight. And it worked out and it was successful. And when I tried to duplicate it again, it was completely wrong because I was already thinking of the outcome. But not the point. Yeah, I think I didn't realize what a big thing it was to get so close to a world record 6 years after making it. Mm-hmm. But for my 32, well, 31 at the time. But that has to be my highlight because I didn't realize how hard it was to get back to where I was. Yeah. Realize where I was going to be the peak. You just don't know. You always think you have more until later on. You're like, oh, no, that was a peak. But I think as an athlete, I have to believe that that wasn't the peak. And that's what keeps me going, to know that maybe there is another peak somewhere in the horizon.
You've been working with Coach Anderson for a while, from high school. Then there was a break for college. And then when you decided to go pro, you started to work with him until now. How has that been going? I'm sure it's been going good, but I want to hear from you definitely. But and I asked that against background of, I mean, I've seen you both in terms of working together and it seemed like a great relationship. How much of that success depend on the relationship you have with the coach? And just talk to us about that trust you have in a coach like Chris.
Yes, I was very fortunate. When I migrated, the pool was very close. So it wasn't a top-notch team. It wasn't anything like that. It was just convenience. And when I came back from college, I did not have the finances to go to any club team or any pro team or national team. I had to come back home. So I packed up my bags and I moved back in home, at home. And so my parents welcomed me in. But what I realized is that I went back home for financial reasons and I stayed until I started making some more money. And then I really had to readjust and say, what do I want to do in the sport and blah, 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 blah. Mm. And I think it was after 2014, before my world records, I realized I've missed so much. Like my nephew was born a year ago before then. He was one. I missed his birthday. And so it was just the big milestones I was just missing and missing and missing. And I know when I'm younger, you have to give up those things. Mm. You have to be able to prioritize and say, all right, not going to this party or not doing this or that because I have practice. But as I got older, I was like, why am I missing all of these things still? Mm-hmm. So I came back home and I stayed home for that reason. I wanted to be close to family. I wanted to be close for those milestone occasions, but I didn't want to sacrifice anything else for swimming,
right?
And so I came home and I just started, because I stayed with Chris, Mr. Anderson. And so it worked out. I think he knows my reasoning as well, and we try and play the roles. But I've seen my relationship change from swimmer to coach, to coach and coach, to athlete and athlete, because we've all learned, because he hasn't had anybody come back after college either.
Right.
So now train a 22-year-old going up to 32-year-old. It's a whole different dynamics for him as well. So he's learning with me as we go on this journey as well. So there are different things where I'm like, no, I don't think that practice is going to work. How about this? It works sometimes, not all the time. But I think the trust that we have with each other is knowing what our goals are and allowing each other to have that leeway to experiment, to try different things in practice, to say, you know what? I need a recovery day. It's not happening. And I don't think I would have gotten that with other coaches. As he says, it's something I've earned throughout the years. But
I remember, you know, we're at the warm down pool, and I mean, I don't know what it was, and he's just turned to me like, no, she's fine, she'll be fine, let's go. I was like, no, but shouldn't we like talk to her? Like, no. Leave her alone. Alia, we'll meet you around. And that was it. I was like, okay.
Yep.
They know what's going on.
The man knows me.
Yeah, no, and that's great. And kudos to that entire support system. At the beginning of the podcast, I'd ask you about 2020 and some of what, you know, has been going on with you. And you mentioned, you know, just being introspective and looking at the Alia and what will happen after the sport. Alia, it's a question I asked you some time ago. What's next for Alia Atkinson after swimming and competitively? What are some of the things that we can expect from you?
Well, I think what you can expect from me will be more involvement in swimming. Like, I'll still be around, maybe not in the pool, but whether it's with swim clinics, coming down, doing certain things around the Caribbean. Also, I'm part of the Special Olympics, so I'll be working with them as well, with Lorna Bell. So around the Caribbean and still doing things as an athlete in terms of representing athletes. So I'll still be around doing that. Looking for a publisher for my book, so that should be coming out as well. I'll be around. I'm not sure what
will you go into professional coaching? Do you think you'd ever become a professional coach?
I don't think so. I do enjoy coaching, but there's a certain athlete that I'd enjoy coaching. So it has to be, them don't have to reach far in a sport. Them don't have to go Olympics or make a national team or anything like that. But the type of athlete that really wants to be in the sport, like really just love swimming, just want to do the best they can, just you can see the eagerness just pouring out of them. I would coach them for sure. But the reality of it is that when you have a little bit of talent and the talent mixes with work ethic, sometimes they don't like the result. And that's a discouragement. And I've seen it. And I've seen coaches get the brunt end of that when it's really not necessary. So I don't know if I have the heart or the dedication or the fight to be a coach, because they're in it for the love of the sport and for the athletes, because it is brutal.
One of the things I wanted to find out from you, certainly since 2012, that runoff and then the amazing performance in the pool to get fourth, people are seeing you more, and you have been pushing to get more Black people in the pool through one of your projects. Talk to me about that, how that has been going, and you know, why are you so passionate about that? I mean, we can well imagine why, but just give us an idea of, you know, how that has been going, and is that something you want to continue pushing?
So being at the ISL, we had 500 athletes, I think, from all over the world. And from there, we had four Black females. Four. So, yay, we had four. But on the other side, four. And it's not like there are others that they've they've discarded or not. It's not like that. Like literally, there are about maybe six or seven. So out of that, four came. And yes, we are starting on a new trend of fighting for equality in the pool. But at the same time, things need to change. So I think by me staying in the sport as well longer, having that representation, having other swimmers stay in the sport and continue to be another representation for somebody else younger coming up, we'll break that cycle. But I'm passionate about it because I see the swimmers and I see what I could have become. Like I see them very shy on the pool deck, very introverted, thinking that they don't belong. And I remember there was a time when I felt that. Try very hard for them to realize this is a place where you belong. Because once again, how you feel will determine how you swim. So it's the little thing that I can do, basically, to just let them feel at home on the pool deck and around around the stadiums and anywhere I go. It's a small thing just to make you feel welcome, but it has a huge impact on what you do and how you pay it forward to somebody else.
Amazing. Let me just ask you before I go, though. How have you managed to stay, I wouldn't say injury-free, because I'm sure you've struggled with other aspects of injuries, but how do you manage to keep the body going for so long? Talk to us about that.
I just knocked on like six different pieces of wood.
let me do that too. There's none here, but I'll just knock on anything.
Appreciate it.
For the most part, I've been blessed. I'm also very flexible. So stretching wise, I've always been very loose, and that's a huge factor to swimming and sports, because you don't want to be too tight and then you pull something.
Right.
I've always been an advocate for stretching, staying loose and doing that type of thing. Fortunately, I'm pretty flexible. So I've always had that advantage to not get too tight. And I think that really helped me when I was younger. Now you have the flip, like 25, and the looseness with swimming has only gotten more loose. With all the cycles that you do in swimming of just stroke, your shoulders do get a bit loose. So with that, I've had a lot of subluxations where it's the shoulders popping out, but it always goes back in. Thank God. Thank you, Lord. But for the most part, it's always been things that I can keep in check. Rehab, very small things that are just a little bit of rest, a little bit of rehab, a little bit of ibuprofen, and I'll be good. So it's awareness. It's knowing your body. It's not pushing things that, ooh, that feel bad. Ooh, but I'm supposed to do this and this and this. You're like, no, this feels bad. It's going to hurt me in the long run. And it doesn't make sense to hurt more hurt. Like being on top of it's just ridiculous. So I think that's where the coaching staff comes in as well. It's talking to your coach saying, look, shoulders are really bad today, and switching it up and doing kicking or just changing it as well. And just playing smart. Those are the things that are unnecessary, basically. So yeah, I think it all boils down to being blessed, man, but also playing smart, having the people around you to pay attention to it as well, and to have your best interest in the heart and to help you out and to have that hindsight, to know, all right, let's not do this event today. Let's not, because you have another event in two more weeks that we need you to be prepared for.
Great. Have you ever decided, I know I said that was the last one, but have you ever decided to get involved in any social justice program, any active Black Lives Matter activities, pushing sport in Jamaica, gender in sport? Are any of those part of what you want to get involved with or consider to be a part of?
So I've always looked into the different things. I've always kept aware of what's going on and to keep myself in the loop. But when I look at people who are involved, they are passionate. They are giving it all. And I don't feel like I have that same level. For me to go in there would be a hindrance, man. Anyway, but I've always been there to an extent. Mm-hmm. So instead, I try and find the things that I'm as passionate about. I have a friend, Natasha Moody. She's the 2008 Olympian and national former national record holder.
I think right.
In the 53.
She's going to say national record holder, but go ahead. right, Alia.
Anyways. Yeah, she is heavily into the social injustice and Black Lives Matter, and I can see it in her. Like, just listening to her, I get that energy. So to have something that riles you up, to give you that passion and energy, is truly God-given. That defines you. That is what you're made for. That is what you can give to others, and you can change minds and change your perspectives, and it really brings out the best in your character. So instead of just jumping into something that I'm partial in, I would jump into something that can produce that same thing. And for me, that's kids. That's working with kids. That's finding different Jamaica Kidney Kids Foundation, doing swim clinics to learn to swim and promoting that sort of water awareness. That's commentating, going to Carifta. I'm fired up for that to those kids, man. but yeah, for me, it has to be some sort of kids approach. I really find that part of me getting excited and passionate about it. And the smile on my face is broad. I was like, oh my God, I need to start smiling. But yeah, it's something that is innate. It's something that is already inside you. And you're just waiting for that opportunity to bring it out.
Awesome. Alia, listen, thank you very much for being on the podcast. This was fun. It's always fun chatting with you. And as I've always said that, well, as you know this already, that you're superb talent, you're a national treasure, and you deserve all the accolades that you have gotten and more. I think you deserve way more than we have done for you. And there's way more that Jamaica should be doing for Alia Atkinson, because you're a star, not just for Jamaica, but just the world. I mean, what you're doing is amazing. And shout out to Mom and the entire team. I know if I ever get another call from them, I did something bad. What? well, Dad did comment when I wrote an article about your award, I think about a year or two ago. It wasn't anything bad. He was just like, you know, he's glad to see that. So, yes. I got that. I'm going to find it.
I love them very much, but they're very opinionated as well.
Yeah.
I'm very sorry in advance. Very sorry.
As they should.
Not as a whole.
No, listen, they should. And I say this for the podcast, because oftentimes, because the athlete need to concentrate on competing, the support system know that they have to go, and they have to go hard, especially for you in a country where we love winning, not necessarily just the sport. I've said this over and over, that Jamaicans love winning, not necessarily supporting athletes, but we support winning, which is sad. But also we support more in the track and field, etc. And you were coming in a sport that wasn't, we didn't have people at that highest level consistently doing well. And so what they did and how they have pushed and cost people like myself, I don't think I deserve it, but I suspect that we all deserve some aspect of it. Be some
never get that cussing.
Big up the team. I never get no cussing. I didn't get any cussing. They're just forceful with a few things I remember, tickets and otherwise, but that's for another time.
Oh my.
So thanks again, woo! Alia, and all the best.
Thank you very much.
That's Alia Atkinson, four times Olympian and the Commonwealth medalist, world record holder, fantastic individual, a national treasure, as I've told her on many occasions. So, time for our podcast pick. So, as customary for season three, I am going to recommend another Caribbean content. So this time is not a book. So I'm going to recommend Donald Oliver's documentary, Darling of the Pool. Well, Alia Atkinson, Darling of the Pool. And you can watch it on his website at donaldoliver.com. So check it out. Great work there by sport journalist Donald Oliver. A fantastic friend. So on behalf of the entire production team, thanks for joining us on this episode of the Dry Phase Podcast. This is our final episode for 2020. And certainly we want to wish each and every one of you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year when it comes. Season's greetings. And I hope that you will have a fantastic time with your family and that you are hopeful for a great 2021. And I hope that you'll be joining this podcast again. And just thanks for the support over the year and well, certainly over the 2 years, but definitely over 2020. This has been a year and a half. So let us know what you think about this episode or any episode. Remember to leave feedback on Apple Podcasts or on our YouTube channel, which is the Dry Phase Media. We would love for you to subscribe to our channel and click on the notification bell. And check out our website. It is thedryphase.com. And make sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Stitcher, or whichever podcast directory that you use, so you'll never miss an episode. Remember, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes or whichever podcast you use. Go tell a friend about the show so they too can spread the word. Feel free to send feedback, comments, or just look us up on Twitter and Facebook, the Dry Phase. Use the hashtag TDP. Until next time, see you then. Take care.